every day, me and you. The Good News and Shoes.
This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good News and Shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Dry you.
I guess you're
attorneys.
Didn't
get it. Are we on?
No.
Wait a minute. You're supposed to give us more. You're not supposed to just wave at me and say, hi, you're on. You're supposed to warn us.
She did. She put on the intro.
You know, excuse me, folks, but this is the Team Martech Hour, and Vince Rosino, CPA, Greg Fasul, attorney, and Joe Martech, financial advisor, are sitting here. And we talked a little bit about this with our extraordinary producer, Karen.
And she is extraordinary.
She's extraordinary. Unbelievably intelligent.
Absolutely, yep. Gorgeous. She's up to date on everything.
Up to date on everything. Okay. We were talking some deep philosophy just before we got started. But what I like is Greg's comment when he first came in, because 2 weeks ago we were doing this show, and not Karen, but another fellow was here and having problems because Tom decided to go have emergency
quadruple bypass surgery.
So Greg Fasula comes in today. He didn't know about that. And Greg says, well, so I guess he missed the show, huh?
I guess so. Poor Pastor Tom.
Tom, what you don't do to get out of sitting and watching and listening to this show, because, you know, he might come back and say, you know, Martech, it's because of you I had to have that extra pass. They were going to get me three. I had to have four.
They want to make sure he's clear for the next 10 or 15 years, at least.
So he might be hiding on us. Hey, let me ask you, is he coming in during the week except not today?
No, he's not coming in at all.
Oh, he's not coming in at all.
So a little vacation.
Well, the phone's ringing. It must be him.
The phone's ringing. 1-888-221-8990. All right, class, this is important stuff. You write this number down. 88. We got a phone call, Mother. I mean, Karen, I've got to keep you on the ball here. Write this number down, because you're supposed to call us in with questions. We got people here to help you. And the phone number is 888-221-8990. That is toll free from any place. And today we have Greg Fasula, attorney, Vince Rosino, CPA, Joe Martech, financial advisor, here to answer questions. And we've got some subjects. Greg, you got any subjects today?
No, not offhand.
Not offhand.
I usually just come in and listen to you.
Isn't that difficult?
Yeah.
You know, you remember years ago,
we just support cast here. That's
a supporting cast.
Greg was kind of nervous. He said, what are we going to talk about? And I said, I don't know.
Right.
Well, how are we going to do these shows?
Right.
And I said, I don't know.
And it's been like that ever since.
He does. Well, he likes to improvise.
Well, you know, almost always
we can dig up a subject or two. In fact, let me just talk about the other members of the team that are not here and understand how the concept started. If you are, in my opinion, a credible professional, you align yourself with other credible professionals in order to help your clients. So there's no such thing as any one person knowing the answers to all things. So over a period of time, we've added a few different professionals, but Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, and Joe Martech, financial advisor, started doing these radio shows, give or take, we think, in 04 or slightly before that, because none of us can remember exactly when we started, and we sure didn't write it down.
Didn't write it down.
No. So if it's not written down, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So the concept at the time,
especially for you old guys.
Well, and that's what, even Greg, Greg's getting gray now, you know, and he used to be young.
I noticed that. He used to look very young.
Yeah, but you know how catching up now. Italians age fast, though, you know, that's it.
It's that vino,
right? Anyway, so what started off was, number one, when I talk to a new prospect or suspect, one of the very first things I talk about is a will or a trust. I feel it's somewhat my responsibility to stir the pot and to make sure people have their affairs in order. And not all of them agree with me, and not everybody will go do it, but it's a relatively simple system once you got it figured out, and which way to go is not that overly difficult once we understand what assets a person has. Is that
right,
fair, Greg?
Right. It's not all that complicated, and you know, unless you're a multimillionaire or something where you have a wide variety of assets.
Yeah, like if you're Donald Trump, I would assume that your estate plan would be a little complicated.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it really isn't. But you know,
and you'd be surprised, some of the most famous people, they die and don't have a will. Mm-hmm. Like James Gandolfini. Mm-hmm. Did you know that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, hey,
Prince.
Yeah, no, that's
how
amazing.
How about Howard Hughes?
Well, Howard Hughes. Yeah,
his estate is still not settled. Joe Robbie, who used to own the Dolphins, and he was an attorney.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Well, there comes the shoemaker and the shoemaker's kids, right?
Exactly.
Everybody else gets shoes, but the shoemaker's kids. That's the old analogy. But the key thing is this. So when we started putting the group together, the two that were important to me was an independent insurance agent, because anybody that's lived in Florida since 1992, when Hurricane Andrew hit, and Hurricane Andrew devastated a monster portion of South Florida, of Dade County, and the insurance industry took a monster hit, and it put about 12 or 13 insurance companies out of business. Now, what a lot of people didn't know at the time, but they're very lucky, that if it's an admitted company in the state of Florida becomes your partner. So the state ended up paying the claims for a whole bunch. But subsequent to that, a whole bunch of insurance companies decided to non-renew people and or increase their premiums 2, 3, and 4 times. So it became a real debacle for a period of time.
Yeah.
So an independent insurance agent was critical, because an independent insurance agent doesn't work for one insurance company. He works for the client. And Dan Warren, in my humble opinion, is the premier insurance agent, independent, on the Treasure Coast, because he's only been in business 37 years. And he's probably under the umbrella of his agency roughly 100 different companies. So if one company falls out of favor, he's got 8 or 10, except for me, of course. You know that's my internal joke. His girl in the office said, "Joe, we went through 43 companies to get you insured. Please, please, please don't have any more tickets and accidents."
They're running out of companies.
They're running out of companies. But the concept was, some companies like new homes, some companies don't. Some companies will insure old homes, some companies won't. There's different businesses. Some companies favor businesses, some don't. So it takes a credible professional that's been in a business a long time to be able to look at somebody and counsel them properly. So he, Greg Fasula, and Joe Martek started doing this radio shows, and the concept was to help people. And then over a period of time, we added Mr. Vince Rosino, CPA, not only a CPA, but a forensic CPA, which for those of you that don't know, forensic means he's recognized by the court system as an expert witness. Now, I've had him witness me, and I wouldn't, you know, never mind that part, we'll let that go.
it wasn't pretty.
Anyway, then we also, because of the Great Recession, added Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, who I've known since 1980. She is probably, in my opinion, the hardest working person I've ever met in any industry. She's just got two speeds. She's either flat working, moving fast, or she's sleeping. This girl knows her market. And what happened is, folks, those of you that have lived through this recession heard words that we didn't ever hear before, especially short sales were houses, and then there was HARP 2 mortgages, HARP 1, refinances, modifications, which led us into Mike Polis, mortgage broker. And that business has had dramatic changes from 2008 till today. So the whole concept of the team was none of us house together. We don't share office space. We don't share commissions or fees. But when we started putting the group together, it was try to find credible professionals that were not new in business with a lot of experience, with integrity, and that were also user-friendly. Now, the only reason I say that is because can you folks imagine an attorney that is user-friendly? Neither can I. However, I met one, and we're guessing 20 years ago or so, and after I met Greg Fasulin, he's probably the only attorney that I know personally that I wouldn't mind having as a next-door neighbor. Not that I'm excited about it, but I wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
No, but, I think it's important to be user-friendly because, you know, you're able to get the client to relax and to actually to the more you get them to relax, the more involved and in debt you can get.
Well, you know, have you ever noticed that some attorneys intimidate people?
And that's what I'm saying.
Certainly none of them I know.
Yeah, right. You don't know any attorneys then, right?
Which just gets the client very
nervous, and
you're not going to get good results.
The concept is being a good listener is not a normal thing for most attorneys, in my experience. But if Greg is going to do the right job for people, and myself, and you, Vince, all of us, we need to listen to the client, what their goals are, what their desires are, what are they trying to accomplish. And if they have a hard time verbalizing it, we've got to kind of help them drag it out so that they do the right thing for themselves and their families.
Well, you know, it's true. And every show we do, Joe, you always say what we don't do. You know, we don't share fees, we don't share space, and we don't do this, and we don't do that. But what we do is share knowledge, share experiences, all together to help the clients.
I like the do-do part. It was good, you know. And that's exactly what we do, is we try to do the right things for people. And I will tell you, and boy, I really hate to do this to Greg Fasulin, because he's an attorney, and I don't want his head any bigger than it is. But Greg's a good person. I've seen him help people. And he doesn't charge. I mean, he's done really, really good things for people.
Yes, he has. He's done quite a bit of work for me and some of my clients, and they're all very pleased.
And I think what we all are big into the circle. What goes around comes around. Mm-hmm. If you do good things for people, it comes back to you. And we've all seen people come and go in every field of endeavor, you know. So
right, and there's a reason for that.
No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
I mean, you don't get the referral service from that client that you would. If you do it right.
You don't build a practice, quote, or a business without referral business.
No question.
You know, I don't care what happens. Word of mouth is the most important part that you're going to have. I don't care how much money people spend on advertising, and word of mouth is where it's at. And it can kill you or it can make you.
In my case, my wife says, when are you going to stop practicing and actually get out there and do it?
I know. To listen. First of all, you can't listen to women on this show. Excuse me. Never mind. Most of our people are women. Well, forgive me. That was not meant to be. Anyway, 888-221-8990. Greg Fasulin, attorney, is here. Any questions to do with the law? If you want to sue your husband, you want to not.
Bring him on.
You want to talk about wills or trusts? You know, we've had a number of questions over the years. And it's real hard to generate. In fact, we had a lady a few weeks ago that called in, and she's got a piece of real estate up in Georgia or someplace, and her husband or ex-husband, whichever it was supposed to be a joint ownership, but he managed to give it away or sell it or do something without her authority.
Oh my gosh.
You got to check and see how that deed is written.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, if it's a joint tenant,
right,
then one can do anything they want. Is that right?
Well, they both have to sign off.
If it's a joint tenant with rights of survivorship?
Yeah, if they're both alive.
They would both have to sign off. Now, what kind of deed would you have if it just says husband and wife?
Mm-hmm.
Can either one do whatever they want?
No.
They both have to agree.
Yeah,
What kind of deed? Let's say you and I own a piece of property, Greg.
Right.
And we want either one of us to do anything we want with that property. How would you deed it?
Tenants in common?
You wouldn't do it, I don't think, by the deed. You would just do maybe a limited power of attorney for that property.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, if you have joint ownership, one person dies, obviously it's the other person's if it has joint tenants with rights of survivorship, right?
Yeah.
But we have seen numerous occasions where even a husband and wife, the properties were not deeded properly, and it didn't say husband and wife on the deed, and it caused a major problem.
Yeah, because you know it's a cloud on the title, because you don't know if that couple is husband and wife, or
that's it,
father and daughter, or mother and son.
In the meantime, we have a caller. It's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
I appreciate you taking my call, sir. I kind of have a two-issue question, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
One is dealing with what you're talking about, home. Retired veteran, disabled, 100%. But I got a home loan a couple of years ago, all right? And before I closed on the home, I went to the tax assessor's office, gave them everything, all the paperwork about the Homestead Act and the disability and everything else. I actually got all the stuff before I even closed on the home. For whatever reason, the lender put taxes and closing costs in my home. I knew this wasn't right. I'm not.
Wait a minute. Say that again. The lender did what?
He put taxes and closing costs in my home in good faith money. Basically, I'm not supposed to pay any taxes. I don't pay closing fees when it comes to closing costs when it comes to using VA loan.
Okay, so you got a VA loan. I understand. Go ahead.
And inside my mortgage, they put taxes and closing costs in, which increased my mortgage about $700. They know they messed this up, but what they told me, oh, don't worry about it, because what's going to happen is when you, after it clears through, you're going to have a lot of money in escrow, and you're going to get back like a $10,000 check, so don't worry about it. If you wait and log and we have to fix it, then you're going to miss them buying the home before the end of the year. So, okay, I kind of trust them, because I trusted the guy for a time frame. And I'm, to this day, actually still fighting, and I have an attorney. What I'm wondering is, how can they actually do that? If you don't pay closing costs, you know you don't pay taxes, you have all this stuff beforehand, how do they actually go in and put it there anyway?
Well, you know, normally what happens at closing, and Greg DeVince, I've seen a document. You sign a document, and so does the lender, so does everybody, saying if there are mistakes made at closing, you all agree to correct them. And I truly... Everybody normally, I mean, it's a rare thing when the intent is to do something that's not 100% above board. Now, taxes, property taxes, everybody has to pay. You have exemptions, but that may not totally exclude you from all taxes, because property taxes, even if you're a disabled veteran, I don't think you can get away with 100% of the taxes. Can you?
Oh, I think so.
Can you?
Yeah.
Yes, sir, you can.
So if you're a disabled veteran, you have no property taxes.
That's correct.
So what they did was they probably set up an escrow account to pay taxes, and yet you don't have any, and that escrow account should be refunded.
Be returned.
Yeah, it should be returned to him. That's right.
And how long has it been since this has gone on?
December the 31st, 2014.
Wow.
They still keep putting the $700 increment in there.
$700 a year. $700 a year.
So let's get this right, Cola. They put that escrow money into your payment, so you're paying in for taxes that you don't have, that you don't owe.
Yes, sir.
Are they dispersing any of this money? Did you get an escrow statement from the bank?
No. I never got any of it back, and I wouldn't pay them until they got it rectified. I paid them like 2 months, and they sold my loan to another lender.
Okay? Correct. Yes.
The person I was working with told me not to do that, and he said, well, who's going to give me the closing? Because I actually paid a lot of money before that. When you buy a home with VA, you're not supposed to pay closing costs and other things. And I paid all this stuff, but I said, you know, beforehand, before I start paying any more money, someone needs to give out my closing costs, my good faith, down payment money, and you need to get this tax thing fixed. And they didn't do it. They still, to this day, have it done.
And you hired an attorney?
I hired an attorney, but it's taking a while. I actually hired two attorneys. One kind of took me to the cleaners. It was supposed to be a letter. I think they wanted to do something called, they wanted me to, what did they want me to do? Something where they wanted me to do, write a letter and try to get them to adjust the payments because it was so far behind, but they still didn't fix it. And he was supposed to write a letter for me. He wrote the letter an hour before it was due. I gave it to him 30 days in advance, and he gave it to him an hour in advance. So I got rid of him. I have people that are working on it. They know they're doing something wrong, but I'm just trying to understand why they're taking so long to fix it and how they actually did it in the first place. You guys, I listen to WCN all the time, and you guys are going to tell the truth. Right?
But here's number one, it's a mistake. And that's literally what it is. And what happened is left hand and right hand don't know what's going on. So literally what happens when a mortgage is done, it is funded by a lender, and then that loan is then sold to the VA mortgages or sold to a government agency. Then the lender that has them, they're supposed to collect the payments and they get a little bit of fee. Somehow between the day of closing and the next three or four steps, somebody dropped the ball, and including your attorney, sounds like. And Greg, I don't know what it's, Greg.
Yeah, you know, I don't. I'm not really a real estate attorney, so I know just enough to be dangerous. But yeah, there's obviously a mistake there, and I don't know why it's taken so long to get it fixed.
Somebody, you know, this got on somebody's desk and they buried it, or they threw it away, or something, and there's nobody in there actually fighting for you. So that one attorney, did you go to a different one now, or where? What's
yeah,
your
no, I did. He's a really good attorney. It's just, I mean, they pretty much, I know nobody can guarantee anything, but he has a proven history of actually winning the cases. Matter of fact, the people that work in his office and some other people I talked to, the person actually won the home. So this is actually kind of a good thing. I might end up getting a home for free because of all the turmoil surrounding it, because that had an impact on another question I wanted to ask you, which kind of affected me. And the second part of the question is, the same day I was actually moving to my home, someone hit me in my car, hit myself and my son, and got in the car accident, got kind of screwed up, and ended up having surgery. But I didn't know. I've been in one car accident in my entire life, 43 years, most of the time in the military. But what happened was this lawyer sent me to my doctor. All I did was call 911 pain. I know everybody tells me the same thing. That was a bad mistake, but I didn't know what to do. And what happened was the lawyer sent me to a orthopedic surgeon that already had 17 malpractice suits against them. And I didn't find out until later on that in Florida, doctors don't have to have malpractice insurance. So this doctor screwed me up so bad that he was supposed to release information and give stuff back to the VA and the military about the surgery he was going to do. He never did that. He did surgery on me that he wasn't supposed to do, and it's been proven by other orthopedic surgeons. But because this guy has such a bad reputation and everybody that's trying to sue him can't win because everything is in his wife's name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find a legal malpractice and a medical malpractice lawyer that will actually go after this guy, because it's not just me. He's done this to 18 other people. And it seems like he just got away with it. Scott, great.
See, here's one of the things that happens. And think about the logic if you're an attorney. When an attorney finds somebody that's not collectible, meaning you can't win, you can sue him for $1 million and you get 5 cents because that's all he's worth.
Yeah, you can win, but it's
you just don't get paid.
And you're going to put a
so if
a
he doesn't have malpractice insurance and he doesn't have any assets in his name, now
you're going to put a lot of time and effort into it.
Is there another route? You
know. Well, the other side of the coin is when attorneys or anybody or a doctor, I don't care who it is, purposely hides assets. Now you have a whole different court system that you have to go through and say, why is nothing in his name? Was it done on purpose to defraud people? Boy, you got another hard one. That's a tough one. Because anything that was not in his name prior to the date of that surgery, normally you're done. I mean, there's nothing you can do. If he moved it after the surgery,
after
then
there's a judgment or something.
Yeah, there's
sure,
some.
That's different.
You know, and even if he gets disbarred, loses his license, if he doesn't have malpractice insurance and he's not collectible, I mean, you're going to have a hard time finding if they can sue him all he's worth. But worst he could do is go bankrupt. Or secondly, if he's not collectible, you don't get a dime, and the attorney spent 6 months or a year or 2 years chasing a dead issue. It's tough. You know, you're in a bad position, and we're really not helping you much, are we?
No, I understand. I'm just reaffirming. I like hearing you because my tussle with the legal system has later has not been exactly great, and I believe Christians won't have believed in anything else. And the lawyers actually, it seemed like they want to help, but they said, I can't spend $100,000 trying to get money from the
doctor. Right. And malpractice.
He's so notorious that they actually knew his name when I actually told him.
Yeah.
So, see,
those
the
type of cases are just very expensive.
The sad thing that happens is, you know, it's one of the perks of getting old. You have an accumulation of bad experiences that you learn all this stuff after your body has been compromised, your life has been compromised, and there's oftentimes nothing you can do about it. And it sounds like you're in a catch-22. You could win the war, you could win the battle and lose the war, you know, but to what end? You know what I'm saying?
Say, caller, before we conclude the call, can we just go back to the first question you had about the mortgage? Have you actually gone to the mortgage company and asked them for an escrow statement? The reason why I ask that is, where's the money going? Is it just going to the mortgage processor and it's sitting in that escrow account waiting to be dispersed?
It's just sitting in the escrow, but they still won't reduce. They still won't take the taxes out of the home. They still got the mortgage at $2,400.
So you have to keep paying, but they're just holding on to the money. So now, there's a disconnect there.
Did I hear you say, though, you're not making payments on the house?
I stopped making payments once they got this stuff done.
Here's the problem you've got. You've got a double-edged sword. If you were making the payments, you've got one situation. You can go back and say, hey, this escrow was done by mistake. When you stop making payments, that documentation moved over to a different table. Now they're looking at, they might want to foreclose. They probably have threatened you with foreclosure. And even though you might be in the right, in that documents that you signed, you agreed to pay these things, period. Mm-hmm. And even though they may have done things that were improper, you still were stuck making the payments. And if you don't, you got yourself in a bad position. So hopefully the attorney you've got can work out a system and modify. Or, like you said, maybe if there was fraud, if something was done where people actually put money in their pocket that they shouldn't have, maybe that thing will get forgiven, like you said, and you'll end up owning your house free and clear. I'm hoping for you, but you're in a bad position. We all know that.
I understand, but the funny thing about it, the second lender, the one that they sold the loan to,
right,
they actually documented and verified it, emailed them. Yes, we know it's wrong. We know we didn't know about it because they were trying to, one company was trying to blame the other. The loan is no longer in our, we don't have that loan anymore. You need to get your money from them. So they went back and forth until they actually emailed me and documented that we know there's no tax.
Do you have the copy of that email in writing?
Yes, sir.
Good.
I do.
Well, that's important. So you've got, and your attorney knows about that. So we're really not helping you much, but I think your only route, Greg, wouldn't you say? I mean, he's got to have an attorney.
Yeah, just keep going like you are. I don't know what else to tell you.
Vince, I don't see anything.
No. I was going to say, I don't know legally if the bank has the right of offset with the escrow monies if he's not making payments on the mortgage. That might be holding up the whole.
That might be
right
holding
there.
It up because he's not making.
Nobody's going to release money.
I made the payments for like 4 or 5 months, not to mention the good faith money and the closing costs, not so good in the first place. They kept telling me we're going to get it back to you after the loan closing.
Well, how long has it been since you made a payment on the mortgage?
Probably 8 months.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you moved off of one table onto another table and you're into the legal department now, and the legal department is looking to foreclose.
They probably froze everything and said we're not disposing anything.
They're not doing anything until this thing is settled. That'd be my guess.
I appreciate it. Well,
you're,
I have no idea how much I appreciate it.
Well, your attorney, hey, listen, anytime, I mean, I'm sorry we're not helping you, but we understand. But the key is this. You've been wronged, and just don't give up the fight and make sure that this attorney that you've got now is staying on the ball, that he's not just pushing you off to the side. Because one of the aggravations is, and you got to look from, and I'm not an attorney, Greg is, and I'm not going to put him on the spot, but if attorney can't get paid, they sometimes don't work too hard.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's not only attorneys.
What's
though.
Happened in the last couple of months, a lot of other stuff going on. I don't exactly trust attorneys to the point where I'm actually going to school to learn it myself.
It doesn't hurt.
They're not exactly the most experienced.
Let me tell you something. It never hurts. You know, I used to go to law libraries a lot myself because, and when it came to certain attorneys and what they would tell me, I'd go down to the law library and I'd look like an attorney, I guess. I faked the librarian who was the greatest person in the world. They'd, hey, this is the book you need to have, right? So I understand what you're doing. Hey, man, good luck. And we'll say a prayer for you. You're in the right. And hopefully this thing will work out for you. And just hang in there and keep going. And if there's any way we can help you, which we can't think of, but if there's some way, you know, we'd be glad to.
All right, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Bless you. And you have a good day.
Thank you, bye.
You too. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one, is right.
That's a real tough one.
And a scenario changed. Became a different animal after you stopped making the payments.
When you stopped making the payments.
Yeah, it might have compounded the problem.
That's a tough one. As soon as you quit making the payments, you move into a different strata. I mean, you're off of one table and onto another. So
you lose leverage that you might have had.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, Greg, as these things go. And, you know, during the course of the recession, there was people that were looking for modifications, were told not to make payments. Some people were told to make payments.
Right,
there was a whole bunch of...
A lot of different opinions. A
lot of different opinions, and not all of them were correct. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people got into trouble. Some lost.
Got burnt.
Yeah. What does happen in life, and let's defend some of these people that made mistakes, and let's just call it that, because normally when a closing occurs, if there are mistakes and you sign a document, everybody that does the closing, that they will correct those things within a period of time, because the only way otherwise would be pure fraud, where somebody stole. They took money that wasn't theirs. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever seen that, Greg, have you?
I don't understand how this happened.
No. But the point was, I think at some point in 3 or 4 months of him making payments, when he stopped, that file went off of the table, and they are now into a foreclosure procedure.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking before he told us he stopped that perhaps the bank was making payments to the county, and now you're dealing with, you know, is the exemption approved, and you're dealing with that whole scenario.
Yeah, but normally when they do an escrow account, they only pay once a year, they pay the taxes, you know, so whatever helps.
So if it was incorrectly dispersed by the bank, that's why I'm asking.
And that could have happened too?
It could have. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked. They have a statement. He says it's sitting there. You'd like some proof that it's sitting there, but the fact that he stopped making payments, that changed the whole complexion of the whole transaction. Mm-hmm.
888-221-8990. I got a thing that happened this week that we take for granted again. And all of a sudden it just jarred my head. And a young lady, actually she listened to the show here, and she called up about life insurance. And she was talking to a company, fine company, good company, about buying life insurance. And I don't know that they did or did not explain the difference between term insurance and whole life insurance. Now, just a quick little bit of a education process here. I don't know everybody that's listening has heard of the words term insurance and or whole life insurance. Now, there's variations of whole life insurance, but let me just give you the scenario. Whole life insurance means you're going to pay your whole life. And what happens is, let's say you pay $100 a month, and I don't care how much insurance you get. A portion of that $100 is going to go to pay for the insurance. The other portion of that $100 will go into this, quote, account, which will generate an interest rate, which is usually not too good, you know, but let's just say whatever it is, and it'll build up some cash value. Mm-hmm. So let's say 20 years later, you've been paying this $100 a month, which is $1,200 a year times 20 is $25,000, you might have $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 in cash available in that account if you wanted to cash it in and lose your insurance that you could go with. However, that's in whole life, and it technically means you pay for your whole life and you build up cash value. So now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I can't tell you. It depends on the person. Sometimes,
you know, you're beeping.
I know my pocket's beeping, and I'm trying to hide it because I forgot to turn off the ringer, and I thought I did. I probably turned it on, and it was off. Okay, somebody quit. Thank you. Anyway, so the object of term insurance is, let's just take that same $100 a month, and it bought whole life insurance that you pay for your whole life, and it builds up some cash value over a long period of time. Term insurance has a start, and it has an end, and if you don't die, by the time it comes to an end, it's over with. So you can buy term insurance for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, depending on your age, what it goes. But that means you're only going to pay for protection. So let's just take the same thing. Instead of $100 a month, you might pay $20 a month. And that $20 a month you would pay for the next X, whatever the term is, let's say 30 years. And let's just say it buys $500,000 worth of life insurance because you're young. If you don't die in that 30 years, you just kiss goodbye roughly $10,000. Well, on the other hand, the other one, you pay $100 a month rather than a $20, and a portion of that 80 is going to go into this, let's just call it a savings account, which it technically is not, but let's just call it that, and that can build up cash value. Mm-hmm. Which is better? Well, it depends. Sometimes when you do estate planning, you have to use whole life because we don't know when you're going to die for sure. Very often,
plus, it depends on how much you want to pay, right? Yeah. I mean, for a younger person, it probably pays to get term.
Well, to me,
if they want a lot of coverage,
the way they sell it, Greg, is that it's a savings and savings / life insurance program,
right?
Which means you get the benefit of accumulating value inside the policy. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you've got life insurance coverage. But that's it becomes an investment vehicle, right? Well, that savings piece is an investment vehicle. So now you got to look at that as what is your return on the money you got holding
you
go. That policy.
Here you go. And right. And very seldom is an insurance company divulge what internal rate of return you're getting on that money, because now different factors come in. As an example, the tables today say if you're 30 years old today, you're supposed to live to be, let's say, 90. Let's just use that number. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's what it is, but let's mm-hmm. just use it. Well, 5 years from now, if you're 30, the table might say 95.
Right. Right.
So when they calculate the cost of insurance, it's based on life expectancy. So that number for insurance can change. Then there's other variables that sneak into these things, the then current cost of money.
Your health, right? That would
no life no. insurance. Once you get it, it's normally not going to change.
They only have a 2-year contestability. Most of them, and
almost right. in fact, all of them. Yeah. When you buy life insurance, they check you out, and they've got 2 years to give you back your money and cancel you, if they find fraud or if they find any reason that they think that you've lied to them. Mm-hmm. After 2 years, let's just say you're going to commit suicide and you're going to do $1 million life insurance policy, and you wait 2 years and a day. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're a day past the incontestable period. They've got to pay it, even though your intent was to do mm-hmm. it, because they've got 2 years to contest it. So that's the incontestable period. Here's what I'm trying to say and what Greg was going. Let's take a young couple, married, and they've got a child. Let's say it's brand new baby, and they want that child to go to college. And what they're concerned about is, what if dad dies before that child can go to college? Okay, so you buy 25 or 30 year term insurance, which in case he dies during that 25 or 30 years, there's enough money for mom to exist to pay the college education for the child. And the good news is, with life insurance, the proceeds are not subject to tax. They're tax-free money. So if you get $1 million check, bam, you got $1 million check, and here you go. Now, different people, different incomes, different liabilities. I know people that have gotten $2 and $3 million life insurance policies because their cost of living is higher than a person that, say, is not making that much money. As an example, an attorney making millions of dollars a minute. You know mm-hmm. them, Greg?
Not many.
Not many?
No.
Millions a minute? I don't
think you're anyway. Oh, okay. F. Lee Bailey. Never mind. We're gonna skip, guys. Point is, when I look at a person and I try to say, okay, what's our goal? What are we trying to accomplish? Life insurance is, to me, is protection. Who are we trying to protect? We're trying to protect somebody other than me, because I'm supposed to die. Mm-hmm. If I don't die, okay, fine. I'm still available to take care of my family. But at some point, my obligation is mitigated, because that child is now 30 years old, and now I'm 60 or 55 or whatever it is. That right. kid better grow up, and if he's not going to grow up, I'm not going to give him any money anyway.
Right.
So there comes a time where the responsibility kind of moves the other direction. So yeah. mm-hmm. anyway, people, when you talk about life insurance, and I mean it to me, it's not an investment. Every time I hear an insurance agent try to sell it as an investment, first of all, the states discourage that. Broker-dealers discourage that. Licensing discourages that. It's not truly an investment, even though you can build up cash value. And there are some companies, mutual companies, that have historically done pretty good job at building
up. Joe, there is no other justification for paying the increase in premiums if it's not going to return something to you. What's the point? It is an investment of sorts, because you're putting your money in that you could have used somewhere else.
Yes.
But you're putting it here. For what reason? Just because you want to keep it with no zero interest? People put it in to get some more back later. So it sort of accumulates value as it goes.
It accumulates value, yes.
And so now, it is an investment of sorts.
Yes.
You can maybe sell it that way, How could you justify a $100 a month premium for rather a term than, rather and $1,000 or whatever, $500 a month for a whole life?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. It's got to be there's and
that,
money here.
That is the justification that you're going to build up cash value.
Right. So how do you get it is another
Well, and I see commercials on TV all the time where people come up and say, hey, you know, we're old now. We don't need this life insurance anymore.
Right.
There's companies that buy these contracts. One. Yep. Two, you can cash them in and take the cash value, mm-hmm. or you can borrow against it. There's different rules that allow them.
Right.
They also have what's called variable life insurance, which is one of my least favorite vehicles, which means we got investment over here on the left and insurance on the right, and the investment's supposed to do real well, famous last words. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, you really made a bad decision. I don't like that type of contract because those are sold as an investment, and I don't like that concept at all. Life insurance to me is protection.
But there's also a trade-off, Joe, because the older you get, the more expensive it becomes. So when you buy that insurance as a young person, that premium's going to be locked in at that rate
forever. Yeah, forever.
So if you take the term, and you better have a long term that you're buying.
Exactly.
Because if you're going to buy a 10-year term or a 20-year term, hey, you got to do it again when you're 40.
Well,
let's say you're 20 or 25.
Well, yes and no. So this lady was 32, and I had 30-year term. It'd make her to 62.
Okay.
But her child is long gone by then.
Right.
She'd be a grandma or great-grandma. So the concept was, who are you getting life insurance for? Who are you designed to protect?
Mm-hmm.
And it was to try to put this child through college to make sure there was enough dollars there for that in case mom died. If the problem is, let's say what Vince was leading to, and I hear the commercials on TV constantly for 10-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're 20 years old, 10-year term, I mean, and you just getting married, you're getting babies, all of a sudden, and you get into a health problem at the end of 10 years,
right.
Cost of life insurance could be triple, quadruple. You may not even be able to get it.
Exactly. That's the time when you really need it.
Yeah, that's when you're... I had a terrible circumstance. Actually, somebody from listened to this show, and here comes an unscrupulous insurance agent, sold them some life insurance, said, oh, yeah, I can get you this life insurance. You'll save money, all kinds of stuff. So they canceled, didn't pay their existing life insurance, thinking the new one was going to take over, and they got turned down because of health.
Mm. So now they terminated the first one.
They terminated.
So now they got nothing.
They got nothing.
Oh,
isn't that sad?
That's sad.
And that was the either let's say it was the ignorance of the agent, because I would never in a million years say ever cancel anything until you've got something to replace it, because you can get better deals sometimes, but boy. Life insurance is based on health.
Sure.
If they think you're going to die tomorrow, ain't no way in the world they're going to write life insurance.
Well, let's face it, Joe. Life insurance is you're betting that you're going to die.
Yeah.
And the insurance company's betting you're going to live.
That's right? Exactly.
So if your health deteriorates to a point where, hey, your bet looks pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want you anymore.
It doesn't make you necessarily happy, but
no.
The bottom line is that what you're doing is saying, hey, I'm going to protect my family in case I die from a car accident or I get shot or I get sick, something.
Very important, particularly the younger families, because if something happens to one spouse, the primary earner, then what does the other spouse do? And if you have young children,
you
could put them in a very difficult
spot.
But
it also becomes, let's take a young couple with two or three kids, husband and wife, and the wife dies. I mean, let me tell you, kids are not cheap. There's also now called, who's going to take care of these kids while dad's working all the time?
Right.
I mean, it's a double-edged sword. So there's a real reason to cover both. Now,
well,
not necessarily.
That's a whole other conversation,
because
you're absolutely right, Joe. Some people think just the primary breadwinner should have the coverage.
Yeah.
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily. You know, it can be a real problem for this widower. Let's say he's got a job and he travels all the time and he's not home much. He's only home 5 days a month or something. Well, now he's got babies at home. Who's going to watch him? If grandma's not available, he's in deep trouble.
Exactly. So you have the life insurance on the spouse so that at least you have some money to buy,
to buy
care,
to
daycare,
buy
or buy whatever, care.
1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. So it's just a topic that doesn't come up. I don't think we've talked about it.
I don't think we've talked life insurance for years.
No. And it's a situation, you know, nobody likes insurance. I mean, who wants to pay insurance? Nobody. Car insurance, house insurance, business insurance, life insurance, who wants? Nobody. On the other hand, who wants to collect on it? Nobody. Because that means we had a problem. So, you know, I don't want to lose an arm or a leg or an eye to collect money on life insurance.
But, you know, if you don't have insurance, particularly health insurance, Joe, it can be very, very expensive. I heard a situation recently where a client went naked with health insurance, and they had a very serious operation that they needed. It was going to cost them between $50,000 and $100,000 out of their pockets.
It can be devastating.
Yeah. What do you do if you're 60 years old and that happens to you?
Well, you know, here's what happens. You know, and literally, you got to wait till you're 65 to get that operation.
And then Medicare.
That's exactly right. And I joke, suffer for 5 years.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it's one of my arguments for Medicare for everybody in America, because I just don't like our health.
Should have been a lot cheaper to do it that way, Joe.
Well, I don't like, I think it's discrimination that us old people can get Medicare, and if you're 64 and a half, you can't. Right, 64 and 11 months, you can't. All of a sudden, boom, you can. Health insurance is $3,000 a month
for
somebody 63
for that,
or
Joe.
Four. And the reason is?
The reason was, when these laws were put into place, that was the life expectancy.
Well, not with Medicare, though. With Social Security, yes.
Well, what's the difference? Life expectancy is life expectancy, whether you're on a Social Security or on Medicare. If you die, you're dead. You don't have to collect any of them.
Well, guess what? You know, the cost of living goes down.
So, therefore, back in 1936 or 38, Social Security went in, that was based on a life expectancy of 65. And guess when you were eligible?
Yeah,
65.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Now, Medicare was 65, I think, when they
It's always been 65 for you to get into Medicare.
I'll say 1965, when they instituted Medicare. It's been a great program. Oh, a lot of people have benefited from it.
It's a wonderful program.
But now they're taken from Social Security, you know, to fund Medicare.
What you're talking about, a trust fund that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
But it's a Ponzi scheme.
It is a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Anyway, let's don't get into that, because that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, except it does.
It does. It's related. Full insurance.
Well, when we talk about legal matters, tax matters, financial matters, all of these things fit in, because every household has to address all of these different items. And how do you exist? You know what's kind of sad, Greg? Mm-hmm. And you and I all know, we all know, in high school, they don't teach you any of this stuff, how to get ready for life. What's it going to actually cost you? And you've got to have all of these expenses. And you look at, hey, I'm making $1 an hour, $2 an hour, $10 an hour, $20 an hour. I don't care what it is. How many kids can sit down and put a budget together? What's it going to cost them to live month by month?
You see, in our day, Joe, they had something called home economics, if you remember. But remember, no guys ever took that course.
Well,
it's only for girls.
And that was kind of stupid that we didn't, because that was the place we should have, because we'd been the only guy in the class.
You probably would have learned something
like
that.
It's like, I look at kids today and I said, you have to learn how to dance. Oh, I don't want to learn how to dance. And I said, man, I'm going to tell you what, kid, you're going to regret that one, because girls like guys that can dance.
That's right. And play guitars.
Which leads me... Do you know that Vince is playing guitar?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, after 45 years, I decided to take it back.
He's taking lessons now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he used to play some.
Yes, as a teenager I did, yes.
And then
we played in garage bands. And then I picked it up after 45 years.
Yeah, oh yeah, goodness. Yeah. So you end up,
I'm having fun, but you know, my fingertips are still hurting me for about 2 months.
Are you into flamenco?
No. No, not flamenco. Basically, you know,
acoustic,
rock, classical rock.
Acoustic or electric?
Acoustic, both. I play both.
Do you have an electric guitar?
Yeah, I do.
And does your wife allow you to play it in the house?
Yes, she does.
And does she put your plugs in?
She says she enjoys it. She might be just telling me something.
You might
you know.
Be. 1-888.
But she never lies.
Yep. Yes, that's true. Everybody's perfectly honest. We always know that. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. Any questions? That's what we're here for. Vince.
Yes, sir.
Talk to me about an attorney. I mean, why in the world would we need an attorney?
Well, I find that they are valuable members of the team, just like a financial advisor, a tax person, and an attorney, very important, and insurance. It represents the team. I like to look at myself as the quarterback. So if somebody needs services, I'll bring Joe in or bring, you know.
Greg.
That was your name, right? Yeah, Greg.
I remember.
I'll bring Greg in, or we'll bring in all the team members. I'll bring in Victoria. In fact, just the other day, I had Mike in on a client matter. And so that's what I like about this concept here with this team, because I know I have very trustworthy people that I can send clients to.
So we talk about Mike Paulus with mortgages. I mean, that's been a monster subject, because You know, when we hit the recession, all of a sudden they said there's no money available, which that was never true. Underwriting was tough. Well, what happened was they went back to old rules, which you have to prove you can afford it. Isn't that a, what a concept?
Yeah, interesting concept.
But if you remember, Joe, last week when Mike was here, we were talking about that, and he says that they've relaxed a lot of the rules of late.
Oh, really?
So it's not like they've gone completely the other way, back to the way it was in 2006 and 2007. But they're loosening it up. Why? Because there's not enough home ownership now, Joe. It's down severely.
Well, the whole concept is, too, it's all economics and pure money. The mortgage business today, because house values are going up, the lenders are more and more secured. If you get a mortgage for $200,000 and next month your house is worth $100,000, that lender is not very well protected. Mm-hmm. And people walk away very often because they're underwater, which did happen during the recession. Now, Mike was saying that there's programs out today that actually allow people to buy up to a four family as a primary, get a primary mortgage, and they will count the rent on the other three units
towards qualifying for the mortgage.
That's beautiful. So that's a great thing. And the USDA program.
USDA is beautiful. It's almost 3% down?
No.
Or no down?
The USDA is no money down, zippo. Now, you have to qualify. You can't make too much, can't make too little. You have to live in a certain area. You can't live just any old place. Hmm. But, and like Mike was saying, that USDA program, which we didn't know until Mike got involved with the group a few years ago, has always, not always, but a long, long time, it was available for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great benefit. And he said the default rate on those, even with no money down, is extremely low. No different than a traditional 20% down loan. And he was saying it's a very, very, very strong.
Now, these are not just only for farmhouses, correct? I mean, they're not only for farmhouses. I mean, if you're looking to buy a piece of farmland with...
The interesting thing is, and this is this makes no sense whatsoever, but a lot of life doesn't. 100% of Martin County qualifies for the USDA program.
Yeah, that's right. He mentioned that. That's 100%,
including Sewell's Point and every place.
You're right.
Now, there's probably not one house out there would fit the scenario because the loan amounts are limited and the income amounts. I mean, you've got to be a family if you don't make enough money and don't make too little. So it's designed for... Let's just say very, very
narrow,
much. For,
it's a narrow band of qualifications.
Yeah. And it's mostly designed for first-time home buyers or second or young couples, families.
So USDA has nothing to do with agriculture.
Well, they do, but they also do mortgages. The United States Department of Agriculture does mortgages. I never heard of it until Mike.
Well, they probably turn around and sell it to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac.
Well, that was when we were talking about this fellow that called in earlier, even though it's a VA mortgage. The VA mortgage says there's certain rules for no money down, et cetera, once you're a vet. But nobody, the Veterans Administration, doesn't hold those mortgages. There's another lender. The VA sits behind it and guarantees it for default. Mm-hmm. But a lender has to come in and put up their own money. And then there's a servicing company that
actually
collects the payments.
Collects the money.
They make 3/8 of a point or some figure like that.
Pay the taxes.
And they do the paperwork. 1-888-221-8990. You know, we need
been
another.
Pretty quiet. We could use another call.
I mean, come on. We got an attorney sitting here that, you know.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
In fact, let me talk about my favorite subject with attorneys. Now, folks, I wish we had a camera here today because if you did, when I say this word, you're going to see a grin come on the face of Greg Fasula, attorney. And the word is probate.
Probate.
You ever heard of that
word?
See,
mm-hmm. There was a smile.
Yeah, I noticed a smile. Now, normally, he's holding a water bottle, and he usually rubs his hands together at the same time. Because what happens is, and in defense of Greg, if people die with an estate that is subject to probate, the probate period could go 6 months, could go a year if it's contested, could go much longer. I think Howard Hughes is still not settled and may never settle, because if somebody comes out of the woodwork and says I'm illegitimate or a legitimate heir, mm-hmm. then there's a contest and attorneys get paid.
Right. I mean, on average, the average probate doesn't take anywhere near that long, usually, you know, 6 to 8 months to wrap it up.
So let's just use an example, one of my favorite ones. So Joe Martek decides to die.
Oh, you decide that?
Hell yeah.
But only God decides.
All of a sudden. Yeah, well, you never know. Anyway, And Joe Martek has an...
I haven't made that decision.
I know, no. I've had people decide they want to shoot me, but that's okay. So anyway, and Joe dies, he drops dead, and he has an estate subject to probate that is worth $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I have no trust. All I have is this estate worth $1 million. Mm. And my daughter is my primary beneficiary, and she's going to be the estate. What do they call the person that's in charge of the
personal estate? Representative in Florida. In some states, they call it executor.
Executor.
But, so she comes in, personal rep.
And she walks in to see Greg, and she said, "Hey, Greg, Dad dropped dead yesterday. Mm-hmm. I understand he's got $1 million. How am I going to get it?" And Greg says,
"Through probate."
And my daughter says, "What? My dad is subject to probate? How long is that going to take?" And Greg says,
"I would say, I would roughly say about 8 months.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. And why didn't he do a trust? A trust, if you'd have done a trust for him, you'd probably charge him $1,200-$1,400 to do a trust, and there'd been no probate, right?
Yeah, if it all is done well, there should be no probate.
So
if everything is,
I didn't do that. So he said, "Okay, so now, okay, Greg, because you know my dad, how much money are you going to charge me for this probate?"
And I would say probably double because I know your dad.
after she said, "Okay, I'm going to kick you in the shins," then you'd say,
"Well, you know, most attorneys, they go by statute. There's a statute that sets out fees for probate for administration. So when you're talking over $100,000, it's 3% fee."
Now, let's do math here now. We have a CPA here now. What is 3% of $1 million?
$1 million? Like $30,000?
$30,000.
$30,000.
And maybe 6, 8 months, even a year. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have gotten a trust
mm-hmm.
for $1,200 or $1,400, and all this thing would be settled in a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. So you become a reprobate.
My point is, folks, if anybody has questions to do, we're running out of time on the show, but you call this number, 888-221-8990. Leave your name and number. Greg Fasula, attorney, will call you back. Vince Rosino, CPA. Joe Martek, financial advisor. Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart for real estate. Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. We're here to help people, and we've been very, very blessed. We've been able to help quite a few people. It's been very gratifying. And, you know, not that my daughter would be upset paying Greg $30,000, but she'd probably dig me out of the grave and shoot me again just to make sure.
She'd shoot you again.
Shoot me again. I had a client of mine one time, and called me up and said, "Joe, what do you think about suicide?" Now, he was in very bad health. And of course, I said, "I'm not going to talk to you about it, and it's against God's rules." And he says, "No, but I want you to tell me what you think about it." And I said, "I'm going to tell you right now, Bob. If you go kill yourself, I'm going to come kill you." One.
Whoa.
I got heavy there.
Yeah, I know. What are you going to talk to about a person that's dead? And you're mad at him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, one, he did not kill himself, by the way, which was.
Thank God.
Yeah, good
he
to
did.
Hear.
Yeah, he did. He. I'm telling you, if anybody had health problems, he had them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He only had bypass surgery twice, 11 heart attacks, brittle bone disease, crippling rheumatoid arthritis, epilepsy. And then before he died, wouldn't you know it, he got breast cancer.
Oh.
I mean, poor Bob. He, you name it. I hate to tell you, Bob, if there's a new disease, he'd probably get it. He used to pick on him. But anyway, folks, we're running out of time. We're down to 15 seconds. We want to thank a couple of callers for calling us.
Yes.
Anybody, you call us anytime, 888-221-8990. And until next week, adios.
And thank you all. God bless.
Okay, Karen.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.